Jonathan Alter's latest book is The Center Holds Obama and His Enemies. It focuses on the 2012 election and all that led up to it, including the 2010 midterm elections, the debt ceiling fiasco, and the killing of Osama bin Laden. Jonathan Alter is one of those guys in the journalism business that so many of us look up to. He was a longtime senior editor and columnist for Newsweek. He's been on this program for both of his previous books, The Promise, President Obama, Year One, and The Defining Moment, FDR's 100 Days and the Triumph of Hope. And welcome back, and I hope the airport ride wasn't too harrowing to get you down here, Jonathan.
Thanks so much for having me back, Steve. It's great to be here.
Well, your latest book, The Promise, President Obama, Year One, detailed the first year of Obama's presidency. That was your first book. Through his last term and the 2012 campaign, how has the president evolved? How has he changed?
Well, I think he's been chastened I guess maybe hardened a bit by the level of opposition to him since he became president.
And you can tell that in a conversation with him, it sounds like.
You know, I think it's pretty clear. He knew that, as the old saying goes, politics ain't beanbag.
Yeah.
You know, it's a contact sport.
Yes.
He knew that going in. He knew that from the 2008 campaign. I think he was rather stunned, might not be too strong of a word, by the intensity of it.
The intractable opposition once he was in
office. The fact that
people,
you know, kept going with this ridiculous idea that he wasn't born in the United States and that, you know, went on for months and then it leaked into the mainstream media. So it wasn't just on the fringes. You know, senators were being asked on Meet the Press whether they believe the president was born here or not. And then I think the Tea Party took him by surprise the way that evolved. He didn't fight back very effectively against it. He had some problems articulating Obamacare, and he got kind of steamrolled inside Washington starting on day one of his presidency over the stimulus, where the other side just ran linguistic circles around the Democrats when it came to framing issues in a hard-edged way that cut through the clutter and connected. Now, it ended up not working for them. They lost the election. He's the first president since Dwight Eisenhower, the first Democrat since Franklin Roosevelt to have won twice with more than 51% of the vote. You know, this is an amazing thing. There were a lot of two-term presidents in there, but they often had third-party candidates or other problems like George W. Bush, where they didn't actually get a majority twice. And this guy did. So for all of the opposition, and I go through the low point of his presidency after the debt ceiling fiasco, he managed to come back. And I think something important that it didn't change fundamentally, because I don't think that he has changed in any truly significant way. But I think he found that persistence can pay off, because it looked like he was down for the count there for a while.
It did.
And I also think that he made a decision early on in 2009 that he would do things that were politically unpopular at the time, with the hope that they would the right thing to do and would eventually
pan out,
and then people
the
eventually
bill you're talking about
not
yeah.
just the health care bill, which ended up helping him. Obamacare helped him, particularly with Latino voters, where he routed Romney, and it was a very important part of his victory, but also with the auto bailouts, which were extremely unpopular in 2009, but by 2012, helped him carry Michigan and Ohio.
We're visiting with Jonathan Alter about his latest book, The Center Holds Obama and His Enemies. You know, I'm struck when you were here before, John, we talked about how much of a reluctant candidate he was the first time around. He didn't want to be away from his kids. And I'm wondering, was he as reluctant the second time around?
No, he was all in 2012. Sometimes it was mind-boggling how many fundraisers he would have to go to in a day, as many as six. And he was very focused on getting reelected, not just for himself, but he genuinely believed that Mitt Romney would not just undo what he had done, but that he and Paul Ryan, as Paul Ryan himself said, would roll back all of the progressive and eventually centrist achievements of the 20th century, like Social Security. They said they wanted to privatize Medicare, slash aid to education. These things that Democrats and Republicans, or another one would be rebuilding the country infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
These are ideas that Democrats and Republicans agreed on for about half a century. But this is not your father's Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys would have rolled a lot of that back. They were philosophically opposed to it. They wanted to make government much, much smaller while cutting taxes more for the wealthy, as you know. And so, but what's interesting is my sources, who were, you know, the people directly around the president, as well as the people around Romney. I had very frequent conversations with Stuart Stevens, who was Romney's chief strategist, mm-hmm. and David Axelrod, Obama's. Obama's people reported that he really felt this was more important than 2008. And on election night after he won, that's what he said to everybody in his circle who came up to congratulate him. This one means more than 2008, because it was almost a small c conservative election, by which mm-hmm. I mean that they were conserving and protecting and defending the accomplishments of the 20th century.
You know, I'm struck by the fact that second presidential terms are often rough, and certainly he's run into his share of issues with the IRS issue, the National Security Administration, the Justice Department. How do the challenges of a second term stack up against his campaign struggles, and how well is he dealing with it right now, in your estimation?
Well, I think he's having a very bad month.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's had a series of scandals that, as you say, often beset second-term presidents. He did not get the kind of budget deal at the end of the year that he really wanted. The sequester, which has been painful for people, he wasn't able to do anything about that. And he, you know, we know about the IRS and these press scandals that are of great concern to me as a journalist, and
yes,
probably to you.
Absolutely.
Of less concern to the public. But so I think he's had some trouble getting back on track. But presidents are great at reinventing their political fortunes, as you can see from the center holds. I mean, he was just a year before he was elected. Nate Silver, who was used almost as a security blanket by a lot of liberals, a pollster, public opinion expert at the New York Times, he had a big story in the New York Times Magazine, "Is Obama toast?" That was exactly 1 year before the election. He said that if the economy didn't get better, he had only a 17% chance of winning. And So things could be very different by the end of the summer for this president. If the immigration bill goes through, for instance, that would be a very big accomplishment for him.
Jonathan Alter is our guest. His new book, The Center Holds, he speaks tonight at 7 at Unity Temple on the Plaza. The event is sponsored by Rainy Day Books and Fairway. To get a ticket, call 913-384-3126. Jonathan, you write that Obama falls short when it comes to his political negotiation skills, and that hinders his efforts to work with Congress. What drives Republican members of Congress so crazy about Barack Obama?
Well, those are really sort of two different questions. Well, the first one, I guess, wasn't a question, but just to answer it a little bit. I think Obama is, as I like to say, missing the schmooze gene.
Mm-hmm.
He's really not that much of a backslapper, mm-hmm. which makes him in some ways more popular with the public, because they realize he's not just another politician.
Yeah.
He's more exotic than that, and he's built differently than most of these guys. But within Washington, the other politicians in both parties haven't really felt the love from him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he hasn't been using the perks and that kind of thing of office to stroke them. And that's a tool that he left in his toolbox. You asked at the outset what he's learned, and this is an important thing. I think he is now trying to play golf with Republican members and Now that, you know, his daughters, as he said, don't need as much of his time, don't want him around as much, he has more time to reach out. And so that's something where he is trying to change. We don't know how effective that will be. As to why they loathe him, I think a lot of it has to do with their constituents. You know, I have a story in my book about Senator Robert Bennett, and from Utah, who had one of the most conservative records in the entire Senate. And he made the mistake of negotiating with a Democrat, Senator Wyden of Oregon, and the Republican Party of Utah threw him out. He lost his seat over it at the state party convention. And you remember Charlie Crist, after he took a lot of federal money through the stimulus to help Floridians through the depths of a terrible recession in 2009, and he kind of gave the president a half hug after he'd gotten billions of dollars for his state, and Marco Rubio, you know, used that to destroy him really in Florida politics. So a lot of these guys are actually afraid to be seen as saying anything nice about the president or going and cooperating with him. And he started to realize, people say, well, why doesn't he speak out more on some of his priorities? He realized pretty early on that if he highlighted something like, say, a deficit reduction commission, the people who sponsored it then were immediately against it. The Republicans, because he was for it, they had to be against it. And he ended up getting Simpson-Bowles, which was a much weaker commission, and then he didn't do enough to back their recommendations when they came out. That's a different story.
We just have a minute left or so. John, tell us about one thing I wanted to touch on was the Obama's grassroots outreach team in 2012 and how important that was to his reelection last year. Compare the 2012 effort to 2008 and just, again, how important was it?
Okay, so this to me I like to think, Steve, that I have something new on every page of this book that your listeners will not have heard. I can't give them a money-back guarantee on that, but I really think I do. But arguably the newest is that everybody knows that Obama beat Romney with digital technology. I explain how. Mm-hmm. And this is an amazing story of using a small group of people in what they called the Cave in Chicago, a secret annex to the headquarters. They had three professional poker players, a biophysicist, a child prodigy, all these data scientists who figured out these new ways of reaching voters so that when canvassers in Missouri or other states, instead of going to every house on the block, they could go to just the three or four that they really needed. And they call it micro-targeting.
But yeah.
In some ways, that makes it sound a little creepier than it really is. What it really did was rebuild the relationships between the 2 million Obama volunteers and the people who they were trying to get their vote. And it's a colorful, fun story in my book.
Wow. Again, our guest has been Jonathan Alter. His new book, The Center Holds, Obama and His Enemies. You can see and hear him tonight at 7 at Unity Temple on the Plaza. The event sponsored by Rainy Day Books and Fairway. Call 913-384-3126 to grab a ticket. Always good to have you here.
Thanks a lot,
Thanks
Steve.
Thanks for coming in.
Good to have Father's Day coming up.
Yeah, no kidding.
For this book.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, Caitlin Brennan, and Sangeeta Sastry. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.